VOA News. I'm Christopher Cruz reporting. A small group of Central American migrants marched peacefully to a border crossing in Tijuana, Mexico, Thursday to demand better conditions and push to enter the United States. Mexican police watched closely as officials from the National Human Rights Commission and a migrant support agency told the migrants their needs would be addressed. They urged them to apply for humanitarian visas in Mexico and seek work in Tijuana, where they said thousands of jobs are available. President Trump is threatening to shut down the U.S.-Mexico border, disrupting a $1.68 billion a day trading relationship. He told reporters on Thursday that closing the border could be what it takes to control the flow of refugees looking for asylum. About 6,000 active-duty troops are deployed to the border with no word on how long they'll be there. Associated Press correspondent Ed Donahue reports.
Migrants are camping out in Tijuana, Mexico at the border. They have traveled there from Central America.
They have records. They have some very substantial criminal records, some very bad criminal records.
The president says it's a really bad situation there.
They have fistfights all over the streets. They're starting fistfights. They said, these are not like normal, innocent people.
And if it's determined Mexico can't control it, the president says the U.S. will shut down the border.
The whole border. I mean, the whole border.
And how far will the military go?
If they have to, they're going to use lethal force. I've given the okay. Yeah, if they have to, I hope they don't have to.
The president says he has no choice because you are dealing with rough people.
The U.S. ambassador to the Organization for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons said Thursday that Iran has not declared all of its chemical weapons capabilities to the organization. He said it is in breach of international agreements. This is VOA News. Britain says it has reached an agreement with the European Commission on the draft text of a political declaration laying out the terms for Britain's exit from the European Union. Prime Minister Theresa May says the negotiators reached agreement with the Council during overnight talks. Associated Press correspondent Charles de Ledesma reports, at home, a political rival to May has heavily criticized the draft agreement.
Following a round of talks with European leaders, May says the draft political declaration on future relations after Brexit lays the groundwork for a trade agreement with the bloc, as well as allowing Britain to forge deals with other countries. She says the draft under consideration represents the right deal for Britain, but she faces an uphill struggle with lawmakers. Labour Party leader Jeremy Corbyn says the deal represents the worst of all worlds and that Britain will have no say over EU rules. It's unlikely Theresa May can rely on Labour lawmakers' support.
Americans on Thursday celebrated Thanksgiving, but it was a difficult day for thousands of Californians affected by the worst wildfires in the state's history. Associated Press correspondent Jackie Quinn reports.
Rain is hampering the slow process of sifting through ash in the community of Paradise, where just two more victims' remains were found yesterday,
bringing the total number of fatalities to date to 83.
Butte County Sheriff Corey Honey says more than 800 searchers will work as long as they can, and they're not taking a holiday.
All of those individuals understand the importance of that mission.
They're also guarding against looting, which has become a problem. Paradise Town Manager Lauren Gill says they're hosting a holiday meal for the community and hopes the displaced, the grieving, and the overwhelmed can cling to hope for the future.
We will build a better, stronger community and an even more beautiful paradise.
President Trump is continuing his fight with the Chief Justice of the United States, John Roberts. Associated Press correspondent Ed Donahue reports.
Roberts says judges don't make decisions based on political beliefs. The president is warning of bedlam, chaos, injury, and death if the courts block his efforts to overhaul immigration laws. He points out the Ninth Circuit.
Some judge sitting in some location very far away is telling our incredible military and law enforcement what to do.
The president pointed out all the immigration cases that go through the Ninth Circuit.
The judges are going to have to get together, or Congress is going to have to get together and stop it.
The president says the threat is real at the border.
If we find that it gets to a level where we are going to lose control or where people are going to start getting hurt, we will close entry into the country for a period of time until we can get it under control.
You can find more on these and other late-breaking and developing stories from around the world, around the clock, at voanews.com and on the VOA News mobile app. I'm Christopher Cruz, VOA News.
America. Welcome to Daybreak Health from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, November 23rd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Zimbabwe's finance minister presents a budget that he says is intended to turn the country's economy around.
Madam Speaker, ma'am, in conclusion, this budget should mark a turning point towards realizing the country's vision 2030, as austerity will lead us to prosperity.
Mthule Mbe is Zimbabwe's finance minister. Zimbabwe opposition lawmakers say they were assaulted by the police for refusing to stand up for President Emmerson Mnangagwa. The UN calls on member countries to collaborate to curb wildlife crime. And a South Sudan civil society coalition is urging the government to put citizens' interests over investors.
We would like to remind the government that for business to thrive and foreign investment increase, it must provide an enabling environment, including strengthening the rule of law to safeguard capital investment, security and stability, favorable laws, and most importantly, deliver peace.
Malish John Peter is Chief Executive Officer of the South Sudan Institute of Research, Policy and Research. And African diaspora bloggers met in Berlin this month to discuss how they can change the media narrative about Africa. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Zimbabwe's finance minister has unveiled the country's 2019 budget. As Columbus Mavunga reports from Harare, Mthule Mbe says the plan should help restore the economy after years of recession.
Madam Speaker, ma'am, in conclusion, this budget should mark a turning point towards realizing the country's vision 2030, as austerity will lead us to prosperity. To quote the philosopher Immanuel Kant, "We are not rich by what we possess, but by what we can do without." I now commend the 2019 national budget to this august house. I thank you. I thank you all for listening.
Finance Minister Mthule Ncube said the budget marked a step toward Zimbabwe attaining its vision for an upper middle income country by 2030. He said Zimbabwe was working toward retiring its ever-ballooning debt, which now stands at about $10 billion. Independent economic analyst Trust Chihokora commended Ncube for removing the tax on sanitary items, removing duty on goods used by physically disabled people, and raising the tax threshold for workers. But he said prices cannot be stabilized until Zimbabwe stops using bond loans.
So in spite of all the positive things that he might have done, the elephant in the room, which is going to continue to destabilize the economy, is the mismatch between the bond note and the foreign currency, which will continue to result in increases in prices.
Zimbabwe has been printing bond notes for the past 2 years since abandoning its dollar in 2009 after years of hyperinflation. The country has been without an official currency and relied on US dollars, the British pound, and South African rand to conduct transactions. In the past 3 years, however, all currencies have been hard to find, paralyzing the economy and forcing the country to rely on bond notes that were supposed to trade at par with the US dollar. On the black market, a dollar is now more than worth three bond notes. Before becoming finance minister in September, Ncube had indicated he would prefer dropping the notes and adopting the South African rand, but he did not mention replacing them in his presentation Thursday. Columbus Mavungam for VOA News, Harare.
In Zimbabwe, lawmakers of the Opposition Movement for Democratic Change, MDC, say they were assaulted by the police on Thursday for allegedly disrespecting President Emmerson Mnangagwa after they refused to stand up when the president entered the parliament building. The MDC, led by Nelson Chamisa, has rejected President Mnangagwa's election following the disputed polls in July this year. Tabitha Kumalo, MDC chairperson and leader of the opposition in parliament, says there are no rules and regulations compelling members of parliament to stand up for the president when he walks into the House of Assembly.
We walked into the parliament as members of MDC led by Advocate Nelson Chamisa, waiting for the Minister of Finance budget. We were all seated. The next thing Mnangagwa walks in, ZANU-PF MPs stood up, and as MDC we remained seated. The next thing the Speaker makes a ruling to say the members of parliament on his left must leave the house because they did not stand up for the president. So I went to the Speaker and I asked him, where is your source of law? There's no standing rule that obliges us to stand for the president. And anyway, we are the one arm of government, we are the legislature, and the president is the executive. So where is it written that we must be subservient to the executive? And secondly, the president is wearing a scarf, which you do not allow us as members of parliament to do the same. They are not allowed to wear part of the guardia. You made a ruling in this August House when we evicted two of our MPs, Honorable Taruaka and Honorable Machungaut, for wearing jackets that had Zimbabwean flags.
Who actually called the army and the police?
The Speaker instructed the Sergeant of Arms to check us out, and we refused because he had no power to do that. Then the next thing what he did, they called the police. So police were coming in, picking MPs one by one, manhandling them, tearing off their clothing and chucking them out. And while they came out through the doors, the CIOs were waiting for them and they were beating the hell out of them. And the outside in the yard, the army was armed to his teeth with AK-47s, right in the parliament.
Why do you think they were doing all this?
God forbid, I wish I knew. Because we did not commit or violate any standing rule, neither did we violate the Constitution. We are exercising our right to freedom of expression. We have a right to do that as the opposition. And as the opposition, we are saying Mnangagwa did not win this election. We won this election. They rigged this election.
And is that the reason why you didn't stand for him?
Yes, because we do not recognize him. He is illegitimate. He did not win the Zimbabwe election. The EU report is very clear. And the human rights doctors have even confirmed that. So that man did not win, and we're not going to recognize him. And we have a right not to recognize him. We're not members of this party. We're members of the Movement for Democratic Change, led by Advocate Nelson Chamisa. So he cannot give us rules and ways on how to behave in parliament, because we don't report to our party. We report to our party, and we follow our party directive and policies, as guided by the Congress and the National Council.
And how many people were injured?
Honorable Karenyi Kore, because they stampeded over here, and myself.
Tabita Kumalo is chairperson of Zimbabwe's opposition MDC, led by Nelson Chamisa. She was speaking from Harare with Gibbs Dube of your Zimbabwe service. But Believe Gole, member of Zimbabwe's ruling ZANU-PF Central Committee, says the opposition MDC parliamentarians should respect the president of Zimbabwe because Emmerson Mnangagwa was legitimately elected leader of the country.
I am very disappointed to what happened in Parliament. But at the same time, I'd like to say, how can people behave like that in the August House? Especially today, when the Minister of Finance was coming in to present the budget for the year. What is very much disturbing is that the President also was supposed to attend. And when the President entered the House, some members of Parliament then stood up and then some didn't, for the reason known to themselves. But to me, it's disturbing. Why did they behave that way? Why would members of parliament behave that way? Why would people be divided on partisan lines? Why would people behave like that? People must learn to respect one another, and especially the head of state. Now that the elections are over, let's put politics behind our back and move forward to revive our economy. This is exactly what I feel.
Mm-hmm.
I feel bitter about the whole thing, really. But this is going to portray a different picture altogether to the international community. They will take it as if we are people who are violent, even in parliament, and who people who don't respect human rights and things like that. But really, this is quite disturbing. Really.
But apparently, the MTC led by Mr. Nelson Chamisa says they don't recognize Mr. Mnangagwa as the duly elected president of Zimbabwe or legitimately elected president of Zimbabwe. So maybe that's why they behaved the way they behaved.
I think they should just have stayed away if they don't recognize Emmerson Mnangagwa. They are entering the house and behave the way they behaved. They are supposed to stay away. And to me, they are supposed to relinquish their parliamentary seats and really leave it to ZANU-PF to run it, to go on its own, than to pretend as if things today it's nice when they are in parliament, and when the president enters parliament, they start behaving the other way around. No, it doesn't make any sense at all. I think the best thing that they can do is for them to stay away from parliament.
But we see that this stalemate, when is it going to end?
I think, Gibbs, all what you need to do is to engage one another. our colleagues, our friends in MDCT to sit down and really map our way forward. All what we need to do is to really put all these differences aside and really chart our way forward.
Believe Gole is a member of Zimbabwe's ruling ZANU-PF Central Committee. He spoke from Bulawayo with Gibbs Dube of US Zimbabwe Service. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Botte in Washington. Today is Friday, November 23rd. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 16 minutes past the hour. A coalition of civil society organizations has urged the South Sudan government to put citizens' interests ahead of investors. The Civil Society Coalition on Natural Resources wants the government to implement provisions of the revitalized peace agreement on policy and institutional reforms. Winnie Shirino reports from Juba.
Malish John Peter, the chief executive officer at the Institute for Social Policy and Research, says the government must ensure exploration, extraction and development in the oil, gas and mining sector adhere to international best practices that uphold the rights of communities and citizens. The Civil Society Coalition on Natural Resources issued a statement expressing concerns about what they call untold suffering and displacement of thousands of South Sudanese from their ancestral lands to pave the way for oil drilling. Peter says civil society activists are aware of the increased regional and international interests in South Sudan's oil, gas and mining sector. He says the government should enact laws on the natural resources.
We would like to remind the government that for business to thrive and foreign investment increase, it must provide enabling environment, including strengthening the rule of law to safeguard capital investment, security and stability, favorable laws, and most importantly, deliver peace. As such, implementing the revitalized agreement in letter and spirit is critical to build investors' confidence.
Peter says communities living in oil-producing areas in the Greater Upper Nile region and South Sudanese have likely not seen money from the oil revenues. He claims oil companies have not fulfilled their corporate responsibility by providing services like education, roads, electricity, water, and health infrastructure as required by national laws and international best practices.
Initiate community projects, including the provision of education, water, health, roads, and rural electricity infrastructure, as part of the corporate social responsibility of the companies to give back to the communities. Address concerns, including creation of jobs for South Sudanese youth, and uphold labor rights of workers in the petroleum, gas, and mining sector.
The activist wants transparency and accountability in transactions involving national, regional, and international investors in the natural resource sector, as indicated in the peace deal.
We, the civil society, are watching your business practices. If you invest in good faith and give back to us, the South Sudanese, we welcome you, we will embrace you, we will support you. But if you come in to only take back your investment and you completely ignore the cry, the misery of the communities, we will judge you and history will quarter with you.
A German lobby group, Sign of Hope, released a report in April saying more than 600,000 people were at a high risk of painful early deaths in oil-producing areas. It also said barium and lead had leaked into water sources, affecting people and animals. The report alleges some pregnant women have experienced complications during delivery, with some giving birth to deformed babies. Birth defects are the leading cause of death for infants during the first year of life and can be caused by a number of factors. For VOA News, I am Winnie Serino in Juba.
The United Nations Office on Drugs and Crime has called to member states to collaborate to curb wildlife crime. Speaking in Nairobi, Kenya, the United Nations Office on Drug and Crime, Eastern African Regional Representative Amando Philip said Kenya is among the most affected countries when it comes to wildlife crime. As Maureen Ojiambo reports from Nairobi, the meeting comes at a time when Kenya is struggling to fight poachers whose illegal activity has led to the shortage of rhinos and elephants.
Speaking this week after a three-day inter-regional enforcement meeting in Nairobi, the Global Director for Operations at United Nations Office on Drugs and Crime, Miwakato, said there is need for UN member states to fight wildlife trafficking, saying organized wildlife trafficking is slow down development. Kato called for collaboration among member states to curb the trafficking.
There is no single country that will alone be able to curb the plight that wildlife crime represent. It requires the greatest degree of cooperation to deliver on the 2030 Sustainable Development Agenda. Wildlife crime at present is seen to be a low-risk, high-profit, transnational organized crime, which is overwhelming countries and communities, affecting biodiversity and development. It is not only endangering animals, but it is slowing down progress and development in many areas of the 2030 Development Agenda.
The meeting also oversaw a task force that will look into ways to see reducing in wildlife crime. In a statement, the United Nations Office on Drug and Crime Eastern African Regional Representative Amadou Philip said Kenya has shown interest in partnering with other countries to curb wildlife crime.
Governments like the governments of Kenya have shown that they are facing the enormous challenges vis-a-vis wildlife crime and forest crimes. Governments who are part of the delegations have also shown that partnerships, and especially inter-regional partnerships, are the key stepping stone to having success.
According to the Kenya Wildlife, hundreds of wild animals, especially elephants and rhinos, are killed yearly by poachers. Kenya's Ministry of Tourism says the meeting was geared towards combating illegal international ivory trade. Tourism Permanent Secretary Margaret Mwakima said that cross-border crime on wildlife has been a hindrance to curbing poaching. Mwakima says state-to-state collaboration could help reducing the illegal trade of wild animal parts globally.
Dealing with cross-border crime is far from being easy. Every nation has its own unique legal framework and internal regulations that govern how crime is tackled.
Three black rhinos were killed this past Wednesday by suspected poachers in Masai Mara Game Reserve. Countries from East and West Africa, Asia, and United States were represented at the International Meeting on Fighting Wildlife Crime. The United Kingdom was also present despite it having an open market for ivory, which has been condemned by countries. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, Yamorino Jembo in Nairobi, Kenya.
Dozens of bloggers from the African diaspora gather in Berlin this month to discuss how they can change the media narrative about Africa. The event's founder, Samson Itodo, spoke with Ricky Stryak about why he founded the event and what African influencers are doing to shift the view of the continent to include more positive stories.
I decided to start this Afro Bloggers Convention just because of the negative narratives and how the Afro image, the black man's image, has been battered and then destroyed through the ages. It's also the reason why it is difficult for black people all over the world, both in Europe here. If you're going to look for, take for example, you're going to get an apartment and they see you coming as a black person first, they have a negative prejudice about you already. That is the reason why I decided to call up bloggers to see how we can take this narrative and turn it to positive, to bring a positive light and image to our skin color.
So it's kind of to take back the narrative for yourself and to change the discussion a little bit.
It has always been our image, somebody else telling our story, somebody's own voice, somebody else's own story. But now it's wanted to be our image, our own voice, and our own story.
One of the speakers was the Nigerian ambassador to Germany. What were some of the most interesting topics that you guys discussed at the convention? And were there any actions taken to forward the narrative?
One of the most interesting was one of the speakers, Binta Fati, who talked about FGM and talked about early child marriage. We had other people like who's called Facebook Boulevard. She is a blogger on skincare and makeup. She talked about skin bleaching and how these narratives have affected Africans, that they have been so brainwashed to think the skin color is not good. That's why they turn to skin bleaching to fit into the white man's narrative.
Do the bloggers or does your organization ever discuss media on the African continent itself?
Actually, this topic really came as we have a group, over 50 bloggers. We have been having this discussion for a while now and talked about the way the African media itself projects Africans. They push more of the negative narrative than the positive. So this is where we want to intend to, because the bloggers have more power now. The new media is the mobile phone, and we are pushing this, want to push the positive news. We want to push out more positive narratives about the black race.
That was Samson Itodo, founder of AfroBase Germany. He was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Berlin. 25 minutes past the hour time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you, James. We begin the sport with some basketball news, where the race for the crown of the annual FIBA Africa Women's Champions Cup 2018 will intensify, with 8 clubs set to do battle later today for a spot in the semifinals. And the first game of the day, he favored Inter Club do Luanda from Angola, will take on Malagasy MB2All in what might be a one-sided contest. Host and second place Feverievo de Maputo will battle Kenya Ports Authority, with the latter eyeing the first ever place in the tournament semifinals. First Bank of Nigeria will take on FAP from Cameroon, while the Congolese Derby will be between CNSS and AS Vita. And on to some athletics news. Francis Paul Kanyili has stepped down as Secretary General of the National Olympic Committee of Kenya over corruption cases linked to the Rio 2016 Olympic Games. Kanyili was one of the 7 men accused of misappropriating public funds during the Games. Among the allegations are the purchasing of air tickets which were not utilized, amounting to $165,000. Overpaying allowances amounting to $155,000 and incurring expenditure on unauthorized persons amounting to $64,000. Staying with athletics, Edward Cheserek and Selifin Chispol of Kenya have both won the 82nd running of the Manchester Road Race in frigid conditions. Despite a start temperature of only minus 9 centigrade, Edward Cheserek broke the Manchester Road Race record by 3 seconds, clocking 21 minutes 16 seconds for the hilly course. In the women's category, just a second separated Kenyan Selifin Chispol with an unofficial clocking of 24 minutes 33 seconds from Buze Diriba of Ethiopia. In cycling news, Rwanda and Morocco are the 2 African nations bidding for the 2025 Road World Championships. In July, the UCI announced that President David Lapetit has sent a letter of invitation to all 50 national federations that form the African Cycling Confederation, inviting them to make a bid for the 2025 event. If the plans come to fruition, it will be the very first time that an African country has hosted the UCI World Road Race Championships. And on to some football news. The Confederation of African Football have suspended our general referee, Mehdi Abid Sharif, following some controversial calls in the CAF Champions League final first leg between Al Ahly and Esperance in Alexandria early this month. Sharif becomes the latest high-profile referee to be charged with corruption by CAF. In the ongoing African Women Cup of Nations, it is a make-or-break encounter for the host Ghana, who must pick 3 points against the indomitable Lionesses of Cameroon to avoid a possible early exit from the 2018 championship. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good weekend. We look forward to your report again on Monday morning. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. In Zimbabwe, lawmakers of the opposition movement for democratic change say they were assaulted by the police on Thursday for allegedly disrespecting President Emmerson Mnangagwa after they refused to stand up when the president entered the parliament building. And that's it for this Friday, November 23rd edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Barton, Washington, wishing you a very good weekend.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, general elections are coming up in the Democratic Republic of Congo on December 23rd to determine a successor to President Joseph Kabila. An in-depth discussion on what's at stake in DRC's elections on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
The 2019 VOA calendars are in. This year's calendar features a variety of scenic photos that capture U.S. byways, including beautiful photos of the Big Sur Coast Highway and even the historic Route 66. Tune in to Border Crossings at 1500 Universal to request a free calendar.